This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, the Dean of all things STEM STEAM, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Well, Galactic Space Geek Jeff is super excited. We are going out of this world. Yes, I said it, because today's guest is living that space dream.
He certainly is. So what problem are we solving today?
What would it look like if we lived in space?
What would it look like if we lived in space? Now, this is going to be a very fun episode, I think. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
Our guest today is one of the few that have a unique perspective to talk about it. We have the awesome John Schaffner. He is an astronaut with Axiom 2's crew.
Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Jeff. It's awesome to be here with you guys today. Loving it.
Well, we are thrilled to have you. And I mean, you've done so many amazing things. You've been a pilot, a race car driver, an astronaut. So I like to start out with, when you were a kid, did you always dream of going to space?
Well, actually, Jennifer, the answer is yes. I've been around a long time. I actually grew up during the original space race, you know, in the early 60s.
Okay.
And that was when Mercury, Gemini, and then eventually Apollo. But when I was 8 years old, Gemini was big. And that's all the news was, you know, it was all about America going to space. So we had cardboard boxes, we had little barrels, and we had an astronaut training camp. So we started an astronaut club when we were 8.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome.
An astronaut club when you were 8. Okay, first thing that comes to mind, did you guys make yourselves gold cardboard Corvettes as well? Like all cool Apollo astronauts had?
We knew we could not drive yet, so we stuck to just flying spaceships.
Making the spaceship? Okay.
So that's cool. So clearly took your love of space forward, and then you became a pilot at a young age too, right?
Yeah, I lived near an airport where I grew up in a little town, Middlesboro, Kentucky. You know, living was pretty free and open. So the local airport was nearby, and I always hung around airplanes and just always knew I would fly. You know, it's just they sort of went together.
That's fantastic.
I love how that connected in your brain. And now that's already two episodes or two examples of that story. You saw the astronauts on TV, learned about what they were doing, went outside and started building that for yourself and your friends. And then you lived around an airport, saw planes flying all the time. Oh yeah, I'll just do that once I'm big enough. I like how it sounds like your brain was connecting those things of, if I see it out there in the world and I think it's cool, that will be part of what I'm going to do.
Yeah, you know, I think it's true for all of us that, you know, when something resonates with us, when it's really part of us, you know that, and you gravitate toward that. And it does, those things just do for me, things like that. It's always been that way.
That's fantastic. So what advice would you give kids? So kids these days are watching the amazing things. Like, for example, we had the commercial moon lander actually successfully land on the moon yesterday. What would you say to kids if they're interested in this?
And actually, I'll say I was at the Intuitive Machine Mission Control yesterday when the lunar landed. So I got to see it firsthand. And I did that again, because if I see something, I love it, I go do it. And I would tell anyone, young or old, that if there is truly something that you love, you wake up, you think about it, you go to bed, you're thinking about it, then just find a way to do it. I mean, it's your life. Yeah, that's what you do. Just go do it.
That's fantastic. Right. I agree. And
John, I got to introduce you as an Axiom astronaut. I want to start for your journey right at the beginning. As a kid who made an astronaut club when you were just 8 with your friends, making a Gemini capsule, to beyond the year 2000, which seemed forever ago back when you're talking about Gemini, or forever into the future, what was it like when you were selected for that crew?
Well, it was fabulous, of course, to know that. But again, for some reason, I just knew that I was going to go. I intended to go. You know, that was my forward intention. I wasn't hoping to go. I intended to go. So, you know, doing things like that, when they are, they truly feel like they are part of you, you just form an intention and you make that happen. So I did whatever was required to do in order to be at the top of the list. So, but it was a fine moment when I realized that it was going to happen. So I volunteered as backup pilot for the AX1 flight. And I did that for one special reason, because I knew I would get 2 times the training.
Nice.
Yep. I got to spend 2.5 years at the Johnson Space Center, something that I grew up admiring, you know, in magazines when I was 8, 10, 12 years old. I just got to hang out there for an extra year. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty amazing to hang out at NASA Johnson. That would be tons of fun. So for anybody who maybe isn't familiar with the Axiom 2 mission, can you tell us a little bit about it, please, and what you did?
Sure. Well, you know, what's available now, prior to all of the things we see happening now, there was only NASA astronauts Russian astronauts and the European Space Agency and Japanese astronauts, the international partners to the space station. We all admired them in the early days when they pioneered, you know, how to put humans in space.
Yes.
But now, with the new space age, there's the commercial and private astronaut programs where private people get a chance to train as an astronaut, become a qualified astronaut with NASA, and then develop space programs, launch programs to conduct science research and education outreach in orbit from the space station. So it's available to line up and qualify for and find a path to make it happen.
And how long were you on the International Space Station?
We were there 10 days. Yeah, there are missions that vary in length. AX3 just returned and they were there for 19 days. They had a schedule for 14, but they had a weather return issue. They had to hold up for 5 days. But yeah, so 10 days floating around the space station wasn't a bad gig.
I can imagine. I would think it was pretty fun.
You know, and the hardest thing, I'll tell you, people say, what was it like? What was it here? How was the food and all that stuff? The hardest thing was just floating, standing still. It took me so long just to be calm, because even if you raise your arm and scratch your nose, you have to do something else to balance that.
Oh, wow. I guess you don't think about that on Earth, right?
No. If you're standing there working on something or in front of you, and then you move your left foot, you better move something on the other side at the same time, or it's going to, you'll start turning and twisting and you say, what's going on? So I was apologizing to people for bumping into them. But it was fun.
Nice. So in line with that, in your sort of learning to be an astronaut, learning to be in space and doing my research for this, I did watch one of your YouTube videos that you made while on the International Space Station about a space art contest. We are going to get to that a little bit later in the show, but I truly loved your honesty and your vulnerability of posting the real video. You could tell you were holding up some pieces of artwork and pieces of paper, and you were trying to get several of them to stay in front of you, to be in the camera view, and you just had to nudge this one, touch this one. Nope, come back over here. And the video that you can find right away on the website is just so honest. Hey guys, I'm new here. Looks like I got to learn how to do this. How many things were like that on the space station? Was it, if you're a space fan, you obviously had been paying attention, saw lots of astronauts floating through the tubes, doing the somersaults, having the fun with the water bubbles, stuff like that. How much of it was different than what you expected?
Almost all of it in that regard, Jeff. You know, when you see those really cool Superman flying astronauts on YouTube, yeah, they've been up there for 179 days. Yeah, they won't show you their first 5 days. Yeah, so everybody's challenged by that. And as fun as or interesting as it was be trying to float that art like that, it happens the same way at breakfast when you're trying to eat something when you're trying to, you know, get your socks in the morning and they fly off and you chase them down.
Do you like go in circles when you're trying to put your socks on? I mean, I'm imagining like as you lean forward, did you fly back? And
well, what I chose to do for a lot of my mission was because of questions just like this, I filmed a little series of videos, 2 or 3 minutes long, called Habitat Space.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You go to our website, PerthsideFoundation.org/resources, and we have 16 well-produced videos that are different things about living in space. Eating, getting your clothes in the morning, toilet, drinking water, how the space station works. So they're made for teachers to play in a classroom, get the kids' attention, and teach something around that, answer their questions. But yeah, so you check that out.
That's so fun. Okay, so you kind of led us into the main question. So now you've lived in space, and this is your first time you spent 10 days. So now what would you think it would look like if we lived in space? You know, kind of like people that are here on Earth, not necessarily been astronaut trained with NASA or whatever. What would it be like if we lived in space?
When I was 10, you know, back to the, you know, imagining growing up around space. When I was 10 that year, astronaut Ed White on Gemini 4 did America's first spacewalk. And we all remember those iconic photographs that were on the cover of all the major magazines, you know, Life magazine, for example, back then, of this astronaut out there at the end of a tether floating in the Earth back there. And I painted that picture in art class when I was 10. And I still have it. It's behind me here somewhere. I'll show it to you.
Cool. So,
because that was my imagination of being in space. And during training for this mission, for the AX2 mission, I said, you know, I know that there are other 10-year-olds out there that are wondering what it's like to be in space.
Yeah.
And artists as well. And then there was always the conversation of STEM and then STEAM with the A for art.
Yes.
And I love the arts. This is the creativity of arts. So we came up with the idea for an art contest and asking kids between 5 and 18 in 3 age groups, what would it be like? What would it look like to you if we lived in space? And then thinking, well, maybe there's some students and kids that aren't comfortable drawing, but okay, so write us a poem. Tell us what you think. So,
yeah, write a story.
So we created the Space Art and Poetry Contest. We ran it last year. I did it on orbit. And NASA is letting us redo it this year. It's going right now. And
we will use it.
And NASA astronauts will display the art, you know, for the kids. We'll make some selections from it. You can find information for that at spaceartcontest.com.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what would your drawing look like now? Because you've been in space. So what do you think? Yeah. What would your drawing?
Well, I'll tell you that compared to some of the art we saw, and the amazing thing from last year was we got 930 some submissions from 26 countries last year. And the art was amazing. I mean, absolutely amazing. So it showed me that kids of all ages already have this great conception of what space is like, living in space, and what it might look like for us in the future. And the cool thing is, this isn't taught in school.
No, it's not.
They form these notions themselves and have these images in their heads of what it's like. It was so amazing to look at it. And we put all of the entries, all 900 of them, are on the website from last year that you can flip through and see those. And then create your own entry and fly, see it flown in space, hopefully.
So that's fantastic. I love that.
That really is fantastic. And more than 900 submissions from more than 24 countries. That is a wow moment. That had to have warmed your heart. Now people are making art, and that is inspiring them to either go to space, become engineers, become rocket builders. Can you just talk a little bit more about what inspired you to make the contest?
Well, I grew up in an area, Appalachia, in Southeast Kentucky. In that region, like many regions around the U.S., are underserved areas. And in many of the school systems there are not prepared or equipped to service an exotic dream that some children might have, particularly, in the 60s, someone that wants to be an astronaut. The word had barely been invented then. So
that's true.
I'm thinking, wow, you know, today with all the distractions that kids have and teachers having a challenge to get their attention, I know there are 10 8-year-olds out there today that have some wish or dream vision of themselves, but they don't have a path forward. They can't see how that happens, or maybe their teachers don't have the tools to recognize that. So this art contest was there to give students an inspiration to reach into themselves and ask themselves a question. You know, what'd it look like? They have to ask themselves that question before they start, pull out the paintbrush. And when they do that, they start exploring their own imagination in a way that maybe they have not done before.
Exactly. So imagination, I have to go here because this has been in the news. Are any of them showing aliens in their pictures? Do they see aliens or put themselves on other planets? You know, all of these kinds of things. I'm curious.
We had lots of aliens. And they were all
I love it.
and they were all benevolent partners to the astronauts that were painted. They were friends. You know, they were asked, you know.
Even better. Had,
yeah, yeah. And the beauty of this is, you know, and the way that the A in STEAM fits, you know, in a case like this, is helps drive and develop that creativity engine that is, we know is in all of us. And even if for engineering, technical design, before you can design something, you have to imagine it.
Yes.
Right.
Before you invent something, you have to first imagine it. So teaching the creativity skills and showing someone that they can create something, you know, out of their mind is something that some students may not recognize until they do it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that way about the whole NASA and all of these different things that we have done as humans. It's just mind-boggling to me that we can even create this engineering that gets us up into space and sends things out and we learn more. As you said, that all had to come from somebody's imagination, probably lots of somebody's talking together, sharing, hey, how are we going to do this?
Yeah, you know, in conversation that you have with anyone, and when you're trading ideas, those form visions in your head that you form pictures of what is being discussed and what's possible. And good communication skills become part of that as well. You know, for you to share your idea with someone, that you have to create an image for them to consider. So drawing, thinking about it, even poetry, making words flow and resonate.
Or just stories, writing stories about it too.
Perfect. Because when we said poetry, we said write poetry or write a song, you know, just.
I like that. Yes.
Bring yourself. We said, just bring yourself. What's it like to live in space?
Wow.
Yeah, but it's a lot of fun. And we hope to do really well this year. The contest runs. It's running right now. You can go to the website, Space Art Contest, and do an entry. There's an educator category this year. Teachers can. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. So, great addition.
Yep. So they can compete with their own class, not compete really. And and it runs through April 5. And then we have a panel of judges. We have the fabulous commander astronaut, Dr. Peggy Whitson, is a judge.
Ooh, wow.
Nice.
Miss Monique Lorden, a poet and artist herself from New Orleans, is a judge. And Casey Hines, the executive director of Limitless Space Institute Foundation, is a judge.
Casey is a wonderful human being.
She is. Yeah, she's a great friend. And we partner and collaborate a lot on different projects. So we all get together and we look at these. We don't select winners. We just make, we like this one. We all decide this is one. So we pick one from each category.
That's great.
Nice. With your contest, and you talk a lot about, you add the A for STEAM because it is an art contest. Do you think there are some good ways for students that get the art part? Okay, I'll do a drawing, but I'm no engineer. I don't know how to, you know, I'm not going to be able. Is there a good way or some good ways or ideas for them to move from the A in STEAM to the other letters?
Learn more about
science or do more engineering or learn about technology?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. You know, I would say from the standpoint of the teacher, it's a perfect opportunity for a teacher to step up and create a connection. And that's what this whole STEM teaching concept is about. STEM is not a class. It's not a subject. It's an education mindset. It's a theme of how you get kids to look at a problem, break it down into smaller problems and solve them and move to success and even move to failure and then move again beyond, reiterate, do it again and go beyond. So teachers, their job here now, and there are, well, I like to call them my first customer, because in the case of small schools, there are some teachers that may not be comfortable acting as a scientist or an engineer or researcher.
Yeah, I find that a lot too.
So having concepts that are as simple as an art contest can get them started, and then they can ask students to explain or do another drawing showing more of this. What do you mean? And when we find a student that is expressing a certain interest, that's the first clue for the teacher to drill into that for that individual and help them explore their own vision, what they're trying to come up with for themselves.
Yeah. That's excellent. And I find that too when I go around and visit schools with my books, is there's a lot of hesitancy from teachers, from parents. I have parents who contact me and they're like, I have this kid who loves STEM and I don't know what to do. I said, take him outside. Science is all around you, right? Take him to museums and space museums and regular museums and zoos. Yeah. And, you know, science is everywhere. STEM is all around you. It's what we're on the computer right now. So we're using technology. And get them excited about it and ask them lots of questions. When I was teaching, I did what's called a question of the week. And I would have kids mm-hmm. come in and, you know, you start with the small ones, like, why is the sky blue? And then they move to, you know, like, how do we live in space? And you're like, wow. And then some of them even start asking you really big questions. And I'm like, I have no idea what the answer to that is, but let's look it up together, right? That's kind of what you're saying too, yes?
Yeah, for sure. One of the easiest things for a parent to do, that parent you mentioned, is go to the NASA website, watch for a space station pass to come where they live, and then take their child outside and say, we're going to show you the space station.
Yeah.
And if they've never seen that bright white blue dot sail across the sky, it looks like a big truck driving across the sky.
It does. It's very cool.
And it has to open up some wonderment in the child to say, that's the space station. And then the parent can go back and on the computer, show them a picture of the space station.
Right.
And then some YouTube videos of astronauts inside the space station doing stuff. Make the connection and get the wheels turning.
Engage the curiosity, right? Get the kid curious.
Sure. And I had an example the other day, and it has to do with something that you're fond of, and writing, of course, is a parent. Well, they wanted to write a book in class. A parent said, my kid likes to write or to draw, but she really likes to cook. And the teacher said, well, let's write a book about cooking.
Yes.
And put some science into, you know, why heat works and why things burn up. So, and this little girl just got excited that, wow, I didn't know I could write about cooking.
That's fantastic.
Nice. You just mentioned igniting that curiosity, and talking with you has ignited my curiosity about something. John, you have done so much. You are obviously not headed off to pasture or to retire to your crocheting work. What's next for John Schaffner?
Well, my orthopedic surgeon, I've done so much. You know, he's tired of seeing me come and go. So, but I truly, Jeff, have found a real love of igniting the excitement and curiosity in young people. That when I came back from space, we started a foundation that was, as I mentioned, that is there to support schools starting in Appalachia, develop STEM curriculum and teaching paths. We're supporting schools by bringing them resources and partnerships. We have relationships with MIT, with the ISS National Laboratory to support outreach and content. That is what I really like right now, is all the things we've just talked about truly, truly excite me.
Super.
Because I was that kid that always loved, if you remember back in school, they had assemblies. They call them assemblies.
And
you go in the gym, and my favorite was when Mr. Science would show up. Yeah. So I want to be that guy. You know, I want to help students love science, love things that are technical and things that are unexpected.
Right.
Because those are the things that are in the student, you know, bring whatever they have in them out to the front and, you know, help find it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we need more people like that do this, because it's not easy for teachers because they have so much curriculum that they have to get through and whatever. Well, this has been so much fun. I've loved learning about all of the amazing things you've done. And I'm guessing I know your
Jen.
I'm guessing I know your challenge, but now is the time in the show where we ask our guests to give our listeners a challenge. So what is your challenge, John?
Well, we're going to go right back to that big fat A in STEAM, that it's the arts and creativity, and I can't let it go. I love drawing and painting. I have watercolor sets on my desk here where, where I work.
Nice.
And if I get a free moment, I love to just dab out the watercolors and see what happens. So I want to challenge the teachers that are listening, the students that are listening, to enter the art contest, because it will bring them forward with something and create an answer for telling us what do they think it would look like if we lived in space. And what I'd like as a test here, if you hear about this contest right here on this podcast, put a little star in the bottom right corner so we know that you came through this channel. I would just like to know who you are and that you're out there. Just paint me a little star there and we'll find you. Just show us what you think it would look like to live in space. Challenge yourself to think deeply, whether it's a moon of Saturn that we're living on, whether it's another galaxy.
Okay.
What's it like to live on the next space station?
Or
the moon? What's it like to prepare food in space? What if you were cooking for a family in space?
Sure.
There are so many ways for you to think about what's it like to live in space. So I challenge everyone out there to paint their own picture or draw it or write a poem or a song of what's it like.
I love that. I love that idea. Well, I'm excited to see. I can't wait to see all of the entries that you guys get from this. I hope you get more than 900 again. Wow. That has to be so fun going through all of them. That just has to make you feel, make your heart feel happy to see all this creativity that kids have these days. This has been such an awesome episode. Thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate you being here. So thanks for being on Solve It for Kids, John.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me, Jennifer and Jeff. It's a pleasure to see you guys. Hope to see you again soon.
What a super fun episode, and what a great perspective from having that experience and then being able to share it with us on the podcast, and then also sharing it with everybody that is participating in these space art and poetry contests. Wow, I am thrilled that they are so well participated in, but absolutely unique perspective, living the dream of somebody that knows they love space and eventually getting that opportunity to go out into space. What do you think, Jen?
Oh yeah, I think John's his career has been impressive, but it seems like what he loves most doing now, which I think is awesome, is talking about his experience with space and science and STEM with kids and teachers. And you know, that of course is near and dear to my heart and both of our hearts as well. And I'm excited to see how many people participate in this Space Art Challenge contest. Be sure to go to our website, solveitforkids.com, where we'll have all of the information about how you can go ahead and sign up for the contest. And we also will have more information, probably about last year's contest. If we can get a link to everything so you can go look at all of the cool entries, that would be really cool. And don't forget to tag us on social media. We're at KidSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and X. And maybe share some of your art with us. That would be really cool. We would love that.
We would totally love that. And Jen and Jeff will definitely be spending some of our time thinking about what it's going to look like when we live in space. So until next time, you'll hear Jen and Jeff on
Solve It for Kids.